Hi and welcome to this episode of Better Off Red. I'm Pip. Thanks heaps for listening. This episode is all about Rebel Moon, which was a fantastic event which took place here in Wellington in Newtown at Moon Bar a couple of weeks ago. Ostensibly it was a fundraiser for AK Press, who are a worker-run, collectively managed anarchist publishing and distribution company. Ooh, that's a mouthful, in the States, who you'll hear about more in the podcast. But what really happened as well was this wonderful celebration of independent and radical publishing in New Zealand. We had a great night, and I'm very, very grateful to everyone who was involved. And thank you very much. So what do I need to tell you? There are a lot of people on this podcast, and all of them introduce themselves except one very important person. In the recordings of the actual event, the readings, you will hear some astute comments made by the MC of the evening, who was Kieran Monaghan. Yes, so very big thanks to Kieran for MCing on the night, because it was really wonderfully run. You'll hear from lots of people. Some of the sound quality is not the best because rock and roll. It was in a busy, noisy bar, and then we tried to go outside and it was a windy night, and so some of the sound quality isn't great, but I hope that you persevere, because there's some wonderful things said about publishing and radicalism and all sorts of exciting things. The other thing we are very grateful for is that Mr. Sterile Assembly have given us some music to use, which we're very grateful for. Wonderful, wonderful band. Now, you can find information about Mr. Sterile Assembly, AK Press, Rebel Books, also the Freedom Shop, and some other stuff on our website, which is a WordPress blog, which is betterrednz.wordpress.com. So come along there if you want more information about some of the things that you hear about. So I will be quiet and let you enjoy it. Thank you.
Financial support. for AK Press. AK Press is a worker-owned cooperative based in Oakland in California. It distributes literature and politics and books and journals and newspapers throughout the world. And in March of this year, there was a fire in the building next to AK Warehouse, a tragic fire. Two people died in the blaze. And substantial amounts of damage was done to all the stock that AK Press had. So all the books that they distribute, all their own publications, many of these books and pamphlets and newspapers were destroyed either by smoke damage or by water damage from the hoses of the firemen. The AK Press immediately sprang to try and get some money organized. And the first tranche of money was really for those companies, for those small publications, those small companies who AK Press distribute. As people you can imagine, a lot of these small companies, there's one or two people, any book involves considerable financial outlay. And AK Press, for many of these small publishers, is their only way to get their ideas and their work out beyond a very small amount of people. That's the first great thing AK Press does for them. And the second great thing AK Press does, of course, is to get them money, because they can sell their books in ways that the original publishers couldn't. So what AK wanted to do was to make sure that none of the little companies went under. And now the second amount of money raising is for AK itself. Their building has been red flagged, which means that theoretically you can't work in it for very long periods. And it's actually getting all sorts of surveys and checks done on it. They're still working. They're still publishing. They're publishing up to 20 books a year. Many important books, many political books, now they've started to publish literature again, and they're still trying to keep going. And so what we wanted to do was to say, look, you know, although we're a long way away, we understand the problems you are, we understand the situation you're in, and we want to offer support. Now, AK Books have always been in New Zealand. The Freedom Bookshop at the Animal Op Shop on Rutherford Road has always sold AK Press books. And you can find AK Press books in Dunedin, Black Star, and in places like Garrett's Collective will always be selling, always did sell AK Press books. And of course, they are enormously popular over in Australia. So what we thought we'd do is initially get some people to read perhaps something from their favourite AK book. And then we thought, well, there's also something else which we know that it almost is in the spirit of AK Press, is that Wellington, and indeed New Zealand in general, but Wellington has a wonderfully active and lively artistic, poetic, literary scene that isn't necessarily mainstream. It's often small groups of people publishing their own work, and some of it is rich and powerful and exciting and deserves to get a wider audience. And in a sense, it's exactly those voices that AK have been publishing over the last 25 years. Writers who may not have been published anywhere else, not because they're not very good, but because they're not in the academy, they haven't got links to the mainstream publishers or the university publishers. They're just writers, and they've got wonderful things to say. So we thought, well, perhaps the best way to support AK is to celebrate what's going on in Wellington. So we have people from the Carver Poets Group, we have people from Labour History, we have the only writer from New Zealand as yet published by AK Press, Jared Davidson, whose wonderful book, Sowing Freedom, came out a couple of years ago through AK Press. We have poets who have been published in mainstream and non-mainstream works. We have Murdoch Stevens, whose publishing company is a wonderfully quirky publishing company, but with some brilliant, absolutely brilliant pieces of writing that deserves a wider audience. And we've also got four bands happening who are coming along to play, and I should say that both the bands and the people we asked actually could understand that what AK do with their work affects them. And I'd like to thank all the people who are going to read and all the bands who are going to play. And it's actually quite a wonderful thing to say about the Wellington artistic community and the political community, that no one said no, not one person said no to us.
Hi, my name is Jessica Moran. I'm helping to organize the event taking place on September 26th. It's a benefit for AK Press, but the idea is to celebrate independent and radical publishing and voices, not just AK Presses, but lots of different voices happening in New Zealand and especially Wellington. The benefit is for AK Press, which is a worker-owned, collectively managed anarchist publishing company and distribution company. And about 6 months ago, there was a fire in the warehouse next to theirs, which caught fire to their warehouse. And they had a lot of water and smoke damage, and have been a struggle for them to get going again. And they're still going, and they definitely have insurance, but they lost a lot of stock, and just a rough time. So we're hoping to show a little solidarity, give them some money to help keep things going, because they are good friends of ours, and also partly because we really recognize the importance of having these independent publishers who publish the kind of books that maybe your more mainstream publishers just aren't going to publish. That without these publishers, those voices get lost. And as I said, also, we were quite friends with some of the people that work for AK Press and have known them for a long time, so there was also a personal aspect to wanting to show some support for them.
My name is Jared Davidson, and I'm a researcher, historian, interested in the anarchist movement in New Zealand. I first came across AK Press as a reader and as a member of the Ka Te Pō Book Collective in Christchurch. We were an organisation that sold AK Press books at stalls and book fairs and various markets. But as I found myself doing more and more research into anarchism in New Zealand, I realised that there was a book here and that it needed to be published. And thankfully, AK Press accepted my submission and published Sowing Freedom, Philip Joseph's Transnationalism and Early New Zealand Anarchism in 2013.
Cool. And so why do you think you went to them as a publisher?
I went to AK Press because they support a radical and anarchist storytelling. They are cooperatively organised. They meet all the criteria of an anarchist publishing story or collective, I guess. Also, I wondered whether there would be anyone in New Zealand who wanted to publish the book, whether it was too niche for some of the mainstream publishers. So AK Press seemed a logical choice.
Great. And can you talk a little bit, AK Press make a lot of paper books, and I'm just wondering if you can talk a little bit about the importance of paper books to a radical movement.
Sure. So traditionally, paper books and pamphlets has been pretty much one of the main ways that people could share and talk about anarchist ideas. All through history, you had little penny pamphlets the size of a little train timetable that workers and community members would pass around and read out loud and discuss. So there's a tradition there of radical printing. And in terms of anarchist ideas, all around the world you have these little info shops and book collectors who work in their own communities to spread the ideas and beliefs of anarchism. So print books as a way of sharing those ideas, as a way of networking with people transnationally or across the globe, and as a way of just keeping up with the latest news and history and theory in the anarchist movement. Print books from AK Press have been really essential for that medium and for that work.
The emergence of the Freedom Group in 1913 signified a real advance in New Zealand anarchist practices. this advance and its radicalizing influence had a lot to do with the actions of Philip Joseph. However, the revelry will be short-lived, for a few weeks later, one of New Zealand's most bitter and far-reaching industrial disputes, the Great Strike of 1913, broke out here on the wharves of Wellington. When the Union Steamship Company aggressively refused to pay travelling time for shipwrights, watersiders downed their tools in protest. At the same time in Huntly, 560 miners struck after 16 of their fellow workers, including members of the union executive, had been dismissed by the Taupiri Coal Company. Strike action soon spread. Without waiting for official sanction, miners on the west coast took wildcat strike action and helped shut down the ports of both Westport and Greymouth. Auckland ports, as well as most of the city, came to a complete stop thanks to sympathy strikes, resulting in a general strike in the north. Such was the mood of militancy, writes Stuart Morrissey Patton, that inmates of an old person's home struck in protest about the quality of food, and inmates in Lytton Jail formed a union and tried to affiliate to the United Federation of Labour. Rather than one unified action, the Great Strike was a cluster of strikes predominantly initiated by the rank and file, involving up to 16,000 workers, monster demonstrations, and running battles with Massey's Cossacks, who were volunteer special constables mainly recruited from farm workers, dubbed in honour of then Prime Minister and leader of the Reform Party, William Massey. Challenges to authority came thick and fast. When the strikers were refused a permit to use Wellington's basin reserve for a mass meeting, the crowd of over 1,000 people simply smashed down the gates and held it anyway. The police could do nothing but watch on. Again, when mounted specials tried to clear a crowd on Buckle Street, two women, stubbornly and with loud protests, refused to budge from the positions they had taken up on the footpath, defying law and order and thrilling the crowd in the process. As tensions between strikers and specials hardened, conflicts began to escalate. Gunsmiths and ironmongers in the city sold out of pistols, and the demeanour of the strike soured. The mere existence of a strike-breaking body, let alone the aggressive and unpopular show of force on the part of the specials, allowed considerable opportunity for violence and abuse. Clashes between the two sides finally climaxed on the 3rd of November 1913, when a large crowd of Wellington strikers and anti-authority elements from the neighbouring Te Aro slums had fire hoses turned on them after refusing to disperse. In turn, they overturned pavers, gathered bottles and pails, and besieged a barrack of mounted specials with their newfound loot. On the orders of Police Commissioner John Cullen, the specials responded with a baton-wielding cavalry charge. "If they won't go," yelled Cullen, "right over the top of them," and that is what they did. Quote, "The mounted specials charged the crowd, which included many women, children, elderly people, allegedly after shots were fired at the police. People were battened and trampled to the ground, and some of the specials almost certainly fired weapons. Cullen denied this and secured censorship of the Dominion Post's account of the incident, but it is certain that shots were fired at the specials from windows and under verandas. The crowd, taking refuge under verandas in doorways and recesses which men on horseback could not reach, fought back. The shower of missiles, including the odd bullet, continued. Through the darkness, firearms flashed and thundered," wrote the Dominion's Pat Laylor, whose editor, alongside Cullen, tried to convince him that his witness account was not true and that the gunfire had not come from the specials. Despite altered press accounts and the presence of police, the strikers stayed solid. Actions accelerated. 2 days later, on the 5th of November, both sides clashed again. The Battle of Fenison Street saw strikers and their sympathisers attack a column of over 800 specials escorting rakes horses to the Wellington Wharves. Bricks, iron bolts, road metal, and anything loose were hurled at the mountain specials. One tram driver even rammed his tram into the rear of the column, only to be met with equally vicious hooves and baton blows. These riotous power struggles led one member of parliament to describe the street fighting in Wellington as, quote, "a system of Mexican revolt and civil war," while the New Zealand Truth claimed the strike, quote, "would lead a stranger to imagine that he had been transported into a country at war, or at least to a place which was in a state of anarchy." Wobblies were the members of the IWW, were especially active during the strike, producing a weekly newspaper called the Industrial Unionist, and speaking from soapboxes around the country. One speech by Tom Barker, which was described in court as one of the most dangerous made in the course of the industrial trouble, and probably one of the most dangerous speakers ever uttered in the Dominion, saw him jailed for sedition. Barker and other wobblies like Leo Woods and Thames were prominent members of strike committees, while the IWW on the whole endeavoured to make life hell for the specials. Wobbly's world is more than words, covering roads with barbed wire, marbles and trip ropes, and rolling rocks down the banks of Nodonga Gorge as specials travelled into Wellington. Once the specials had arrived, Wobbly's joined a throng of strikers that attacked their headquarters, raging through and basically stampeding the horses and tossing all their stuff into the waterfront. However, before long, naval ships berthed in Auckland and Wellington had their guns trained on the city. Machine guns were strategically placed in pockets of Wellington, and soldiers with naked bayonets protected both specials and free labour to reopen the docks. By December 1913, strike leaders were arrested and doing jail for sedition, localised strikes had collapsed, and workers drifted back to work, and the coalition of government and employers gained the upper hand. The veneer of democracy was resumed under a cover of military might. The Freedom Group, which began with such promise, completely disappears from the record after the Great Strike of 1913. Who knows what the group could have achieved had it been given more time to develop. Thank you.
I was just thinking while you were reading that, like, I'm not sure how those stories translate on the international stage, but actually sitting here and being able to picture those environments where those running battles were going, actually as a history that is not often sort of able to be accessed, and I'm actually really thankful that those stories have been published. So, and it's great to be able to hear you read them as well. I also like the story of Anarchist Communist Ball as well. I mean, that's quite a fine sort of tradition. This is just like a cafe meeting of the Anarchist Communist Ball. Okay, so next up, representing Rebel Press, we have Valerie Morse, who is well known to many. And don't say anything else. Valerie Morse, ladies and gents.
Standing up in front of crowds of people, but not so much with giant lights in my face. I want to say a big thanks to Kieran and Jessica and Barry, who I think are the prime drivers behind this little project here. Awesome work, you guys, and to all the folks who are here to lend their time to Korero. And a big thanks to Mariah McMillan, because she's going after me. She's a really great speaker, and I'd really hate to have to follow her. Rebel Press publishes a little magazine we call Imminent Rebellion. We publish it very occasionally when the mood strikes us. And in each of the issues, we include a description of what anarchism is. So I thought that I would read from the last five issues, which covers the period going back to 2008, the various descriptions that we have we've included in the magazine. So starting with this issue, number 9 from 2008. Anarchism begins from the central insight that social hierarchies are unnecessary and therefore oppressive. In place of the systemic violence of power, anarchism seeks instead to expand upon the combined ideals of freedom coupled with equality. Against the centralization and violence of the state, anarchism proposes the full decentralization of the political and the economic, the destruction of national borders, and the horizontal organization of life, from the smallest to the largest, from the simplest to the most complex. Against wage slavery and poverty, anarchism seeks the full socialization of property, shared and worked in common to directly meet the needs of people, and in rejecting hierarchies of identity, sexual, racial, ethnic, or otherwise, anarchism seeks an expansive and thoroughgoing egalitarianism, decentralization, free association, and mutual aid. Such are the key concepts of anarchism. From issue number 10, a quote here from Colin Ward. Far from being a speculative vision of a future society, anarchism is a description of a mode of human organization rooted in the experience of everyday life, which operates side by side with and in spite of the dominant authoritarian trends of our society. This is not a new version of anarchism. Gustav Landauer saw it not as the founding of something new, but as the actualization and reconstitution of something that has always been present, which exists alongside the state, albeit buried and laid waste. And a modern anarchist, Paul Goodman, declared that a free society cannot be the substitution of a new order for the old order. It is the extension of spheres of free action until they make up the most of social life. An anarchist society, a society which organizes itself without authority, is always in existence, like a seed beneath the snow. And from issue 11, from Enrico Malatesta, The Anarchist Revolution. The revolution is the creation of new living institutions, new groupings, new social relationships. It is the destruction of privileges and monopolies. It is the new spirit of justice, of brotherhood, of freedom, which must renew the whole of social life, raise the moral level and the material conditions of the masses by calling on them to provide, through their direct and conscientious action, for their own futures. Revolution is the destruction of all coercive ties. It is the autonomy of groups, of communes, of regions. Revolution is the free federation brought about by desire for brotherhood, by individual and collective interests, by the needs of productive production and defense. Revolution is the constitution of innumerable free groupings based on ideas, wishes, and tastes of all kinds that exist among the people. Revolution is freedom proved in the crucible of facts. And from issue number 12, from Maya Ramnath, Decolonizing Anarchism. With a small a, the word anarchism implies a set of assumptions and principles, a recurrent tendency or orientation with a stress on movement in a direction, not a perfected condition, toward a more dispersed and less concentrated power, less top-down hierarchy, and more self-up determination through bottom-up participation, liberty and equality seen as directly rather than inversely proportional, the nurturance of individuality and diversity within a matrix of interconnectivity, mutuality, and accountability, and an expansive recognition of the various forms that power relations can take, and correspondingly, the various dimensions of emancipation. This tendency, when it becomes conscious, motivates people to oppose or subvert the structures that generate and sustain inequity, unfreedom, injustice, and to promote or prefigure the structures that generate and sustain equity, freedom, and justice. And finally, from that wonderful piece of utopian literature, The Dispossessed, Ursula Le Guin says, "We have nothing but our freedom. We have nothing to give you but your own freedom. We have no law but the single principle of mutual aid between individuals. We have no government but the single participation principle of free association. We have no states, no nations, no presidents, no premiers, no chiefs, no generals, no bosses, no bankers, no landlords, no wages, no charity, no police, no soldiers, no war. Nor do we have much else. We are sharers, not owners. We are not prosperous. None of us is rich. None of us is powerful. If it is anarchism you want, if it is the future you seek, then I tell you, you must come to it with empty hands. You cannot buy the revolution. You cannot make the revolution. You can only be the revolution. It is in your spirit, or it is nowhere."
I'm Mariah McMillan, and I think Kieran asked me because I'm a poet, and I wanted to support AK Press because I think independent publishers and booksellers are really important, and that often I'm really excited about publishers which are doing that crossover between literature and and politics. I think sometimes you get into a situation where being a writer or being an artist excuses you from engaging with the real world, and that doesn't make any sense to me. So I think things like AK Press should survive.
My name's Grace Miller. I'm here tonight. I have many hats, but I'm here tonight as the chair of the New Zealand Labour History Project. And it's really important to us to offer solidarity to organisations in other places who are doing the same sorts of things we're doing, and that is trying to ensure, capture, create the history of resistance and the history of struggle and history of things that we've lost and won survives, and that doesn't happen unless people make it happen. And so we're here today to support AK Press in what they've been doing.
Hi, I'm Brenovan Yanalingam. I have published three books through Lawrence of Gibson, and Lawrence of Gibson print their books at Rebel Press, and Rebel Press have been fantastic. They give us the space to print our books, and we feel as writers part of the process, connected to the actual creation of the book, which I think a lot of writers often don't get. There's always great music, and we always play Kate Bush very loudly, and it's great.
My name is Faith Wilson. Tonight I'm reading from an AK Press poetry book by Benjamin Zephaniah called The Little Book of Vegan Poems. And it's important to me because it's a part of my ethic and lifestyle that actually doesn't get a lot of attention in my own writing. And so it's good that someone else writes about it so that I can read it.
My name is Murdoch Stevens, and I am the editor of Lawrence and Gibson Publishing. And so I'm here to talk about publishing in Wellington and Rebel Press as a local unit that has all the means of production.
Awesome. And what's been important to you about being able to use Rebel Press as a publisher?
I mean, Rebel Press allows us to be completely involved with the making of a book. That means we get to choose the quality and the type of paper. It means we get to choose the size of the book, and we have complete control over the production process. So a lot of the books you see that are made in all sorts of places, to get them cheap, they have to use really ugly paper, really rubbish paper, and they can only do this one size, whereas we use 100% recycled paper. We can do whatever covers we want, print it anywhere we want, and we have complete control over making that. We can do as few as possible. We could do 8. So I did my grandfather's diaries from World War II. I did a series of those for my family, which wasn't through Lawrence and Gibson, but we've also produced over 1,000 copies of one of our most successful books through them. So it really gives us freedom and control over the production process.
That's awesome. Why do you think paper publishing is important now?
I still like reading books.
Yeah.
I feel like on a computer drive, things get lost. In my bedroom, I have bookshelves, and I see the spines of books, and I know what they look like, and they're not all the same. There's different colors, and things remind me of different books, and being reminded of those books is reminded of different ideas. And so to have something in a material form is just beautiful because it's material. But it also reminds me of that book, so I'll pick it up and leaf through it. Most of my music is on my computer, and I forget about bands sometimes, and I forget they exist. I wish I had the vinyl collection that I do of books, and I don't, and that's really sad.
Thank you for that, and I think you're right. It's chilling in the comparison to the stories that may be written in the future from people currently going through similar experiences there as they're fleeing Syria. I now want to welcome Leilani Visasio as co-founder of the Kava Club to the stage. Give her a welcome.
Karen gets 5 points for saying my name right. I'm going to read a poem out of this thing that I haven't paid for yet called Fair Brown Queers. Returning and decentering the white gaze, an ongoing visual essay. Don't ask me what that means because I don't know. I chose this poem because it resonates with me and I think it's very, very inspirational. It's called Not Your Fucking Rainbow, and it's by two women called Krishna Ista and Travis Alavanza. I am brown. I am brown. We are obviously brown. It's the first thing you see. It's the first thing you hear. It's the first thing you force upon me. Yet we all want to call this your post-racial society. We are still obviously brown. I wear the rainbow flag not because it signifies who I am, but because I was told it does. I wear the rainbow flag not because it signifies who I am, but because I was told it does. I wear the rainbow flag not because it's affiliated with Cooperative Assimilationist Pride Parade in 2015, but because it holds meaning to queers. But which queers? Those queers on TV, in newspapers, plastered on the media, waving the rainbow flag they represent? Those queers you hear of in storybooks? The queers that call themselves leaders? The queer politicians screaming for the rainbow flag they represent? I see them, I hear them, but I am not them. They tell me I need to be a rainbow, I need to hold it up with pride. But they do not see what being queer and brown means, what being trans and brown means, and that makes for a tainted bloody rainbow. For most of my brown siblings, the rainbow means fuck all. It means we were subjected to westernised standards of gender and sexuality. It means we are bound to boxes of freedom that have nothing to do with our own. It traps us all in coloured tiles and lets us dry out one by one. We are not your fucking rainbow. 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 We are not your fucking pride plastered white LGBT, but really we just mean G rainbow. We are not your fucking rainbow. We are not your brown diversity tick box to discard the next day. We are not your brown sugar candy to throw up when you are done. We are not your hashtag brown fetish on your Tinder profile. We are not just brown skin to be grinded down to fit into your OkCupid dream. We are not your fucking rainbow. We are not your friends to tell you when you are being problematic like queers. We are not your hip quirky pocket toy to pop out at your queer discos. We are not your fucking seat to fill on a panel discussion or a voice to arm silence only when we are being respectable. We are not your fucking rainbow. We are so much more than what the system gives us. We are so much more than what this rainbow shows us. We are so much more than what you tell us. We are a lot of things. Our skin holds complexity and nuance richer than the lands you stamped upon. Our words hold depth running deeper than the history you stole from us. Our skin holds more colours than your flag will ever show us. Because there is no brain round on this rainbow. We are not your fucking rainbow.
Marvel of these modern minds to market to the masses the same mumble many times. The symbols and the syntax supplied within the news create and construct a cartoon of horrid views. And once it's on the screen, it's valid then as proof. So go flip through the channel to see the branded truth. Stereotyped image of all social ills.